This is the special Can't Believe It bonus gold logo edition of Only the Valiant episode 79 Archer and Armstrong commentary track gold. All right, welcome to the very first Only the Valiant commentary track episode. We're trying out something a little bit different. I, as always, am your Valiant host, Sean, and with me are the other best Valiant hosts in the world. I've got Chiclo with me.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Yes.
Yes. And, of course, I've got Jonesy with me. How you doing?
Doing well. What I mean to say is, I'm doing good.
Okay. All right. We'll take both. And also with me is Elveen. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, everybody?
All right. So, we're kind of doing an experiment here. This is a commentary track episode, and we're kind of taking a riff off of a DVD commentary track. And, you know, you've read Archer and Armstrong number one already. You've read it once through, and we want to make it fun to read it again. So pick up your copy of Archer and Armstrong, and we're going to be going along through the issue with you and just kind of going kind of in-depth into each page and talking about some of the background information, some of the references, kind of just getting the director's commentary, except we're not the directors. We're just people that read too many Valiant comics.
So this is more like riff tracks.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. But probably funnier, right? Because we're awesome like that.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see. All right, so first of all, the details. Archer and Armstrong, it came out August 8th, written by Fred Van Lente, pencils and inks by Clayton Henry, colors by Matt Mila, letters by Dave Lamphere. The editing team was assistant editor Josh Johns, associate editor Jody LaHoop, and executive editor Warren Simons.
What's up, Warren?
What's up?
What's up, Warren?
The regular covers by Miko Suiyan. There's the Pulbok exclusive cover by Clayton Henry. There's a 1 in 20 retailer incentive cover by David Aja. And a 1 in 100 line-wide incentive cover by Neil Adams.
Who did the cover for the second print?
The second print is by Clayton Henry.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So same as the artist is doing the interiors. All right, so you guys want to just jump right into it?
Page one.
All right, so open up your books to page one. Ancient Mesopotamia, it's a Tuesday. So ancient Mesopotamia, that of course is like the area where like Iraq and northern Syria and Turkey are.
Turkey? Who you calling dive? Turkey, Turkey?
Quit jiving me, Turkey! And it was the cradle of civilization, so to speak. So what do we find out here? So, Gilead's the youngest brother.
Right.
Of course. And Gilead, of course, is the Eternal Warrior.
But here, is he the Eternal Warrior here? On that got me kind of confused. Is that Gil is the dude on the tablet, right?
Yeah. I don't think he's Eternal yet.
He's not Eternal yet. He's the Dead Warrior at this time.
Yeah, he appears to be the Dead Warrior, yes.
Right. And we do establish here that Ivar is the oldest still.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Ivar is the eldest. And Gilead, he was always the most noble of the three. And that was kind of a trait that Eternal Warrior had back in the original as well. He was kind of kind of almost stubbornly noble. And it looks like his nobleness got him dead.
Yes.
So Ivar is wants to use this boon. It looks like bring back Gilead. The weird thing is he's saying he's making the difficult decisions, but it seems like Ivar isn't doing this out of love for his brother.
No, Ivar comes off like a punk.
Yeah, uh-huh. He does not look like a man distraught. That's the one thing I noticed. You know, he looks like somebody who's using the dead Gilead as an excuse to pursue his own agenda.
What a user.
Yeah, definitely.
It's been in my experience that boons and excuses go together.
There you go. I won't ask how that's your experience. But, all right. You want to, let's jump to page two.
Now, are we going to talk really quick about even before the story starts, they tell us what's going to happen.
In what way?
Well, I see in the first box, ancient Mesopotamia, before the great cataclysm.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, good
so,
call.
There's one thing that, you know, classic Valiant had where Solar black-holed the world into himself and remade it, And that was how you get Geomancers, Harbingers, all the things, is Solar remaking it not perfectly, and that's where all that happens. So I wonder if
he gave it an upgrade.
Right, and I wonder if they're going to use this as the kind of same way. So this is almost the, I mean, we'll get to it, but this is kind of the recreation, if you will, of the world, is in Archonaut Front number one.
The white event, more or less?
Sure. Yeah, you know, they're kind of like kickstart type event that kind of...
Jumpstart!
Jumpstarts, you know, the...
Just
the
like in the Ultraverse.
Yeah, sorry, only the Ultraverse.
Don't want to step on anybody's toes.
I know, seriously.
So the Great Cataclysm, a harbinger of things to come.
Yes. All right, so let's jump to page two. Gilad, it appears, died, you know, serving king and country. And this kind of jumped out as me as something I kind of noticed a lot, is them using kind of like modern phrases, you know, out of place. You know, like the idea of king and country, that's something I always associate it with, like, you know, like England, exactly. And like, you know, the British Royal Empire and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's kind of a juxtaposition that's done in the writing a bit. So then in the next panel, I think Ivar, that's showing the king there, that and Ivar killed him. Is that what you guys... In the second panel down on page two.
Right.
He says, the old tyrant should have known better than to keep us from using it. And there's the one guy who has something that kind of looks like a crown on his head.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of dressed really... But he's dressed like all the other dudes, though, too. You know what I mean?
But he's wearing laurels. The others don't seem to be.
Yeah, that was only the only, what I was kind of thinking. Like, maybe he's just like, well, the king wears togas, and everyone wears togas, and he just has a special, like, headband thing.
He also has the... The bracelets on. The gauntlets.
The van braces.
Yeah. Would you call them, Chiclo?
Van braces.
Aren't they gauntlets? Same thing?
Gauntlets involve gloves.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So they're van braces.
There you go.
you know who else wears van braces?
Wonder Woman.
Vans with crooked teeth.
That makes sense. On their grills.
There you go.
With crooked grills.
Work with me.
So Ivar's going to turn this thing on. This whatever it is we've seen so far. And now here's something that Aram says that's really interesting. He says, we don't know what will happen if we turn it on or if it even works on humans. And we'll see something in the next couple pages that makes me think that this may be another kind of like alien connection.
Is the Vine here?
Maybe. Or maybe even some other extraterrestrial race.
Right. Perhaps some other race that had other advanced Shannara technology.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. But do you think these guys have anything to do with this race?
I'm not sure. I think that they've encountered them. And we'll get to that, I think, on the next page.
But we know how Gil died. Gil died bringing back the boon.
Yes. Okay. And apparently bringing it back for the king.
Right.
Okay, so on the next page here is where you get Ivar giving his great speech here. And we see the boon here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that he calls them the people of Ur.
Right.
And, of course, Ur was a ancient Mesopotamian city.
Where Abraham was from.
Oh, is it?
The biblical Abraham is from Ur.
Okay.
Ur of the Chaldees.
Okay. I know that Ur is kind of like, it's in present-day Iraq, probably kind of like in the middle of Iraq.
Well known for its ziggurat.
Yes.
Now the word Ur I usually use as a frequent answer to my wife's questions. How come you didn't do this? How come you do that? I go... it works really well, OTV listeners.
All right.
There you go.
There's a hidden meaning in here.
There is.
Fred Van Lente is teaching us secret lessons for marriage maintenance.
That's right.
All right.
I would never do such a thing to my wife or any of our other listeners.
No, neither would I.
Let's move on. So... He says that your heroes, the Anipata, have returned triumphant from the faraway.
Mm.
I wasn't sure, you know, the way it said, it could be a place or it could be like a thing, you know, because it's the faraway. And he says, and he's brought back its boons, and must eternal life be for gods alone? So it kind of strikes me as that, well, there's this place that is the faraway, where there are these entities that live forever due to this thing that we see here, this boon. and they're considered gods.
There's a couple of possibilities that come to mind. The first is Atlantis.
Mm, yeah, that's a good one.
The second, less likely, that's why I say it's second, Mount Olympus, which would be fairly far away from Ur, certainly across Anatolia and Macedonia, uh-huh. by, 10,000 BC standards.
Interesting. So the way I read it, I was thinking that this could also tie into, like, those, you know, ancient aliens hypotheses. You know how there's all these
right.
crazy, wacky theories that, you know, aliens visited the Earth and built the pyramids and stuff like that, and, like, you know, the line art down in South America is their runways and, you know, all that kind of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of reminded me of that as well.
For me, I thought the faraway would have been more like another dimension of sorts.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking something kind of similar here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's also these four symbols that we see on the on the boon.
And it looks like the symbols continue below the panel.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And one of them is a big X and a little O. I don't know if that means anything, but you know, just pointing it out. All right, so I jump to the next page.
All right.
And boom, this is an awesome action-packed page. And I think that this looks really great. And it's just like the action is drawn really well and just shows a really cool Aram, you know, just in his youthful vitality warrior days.
Not so fat right now.
Exactly. Yeah, he's not the Armstrong that I think we'll eventually expect to see. You know,
he's downright cut.
Yeah, he is.
He ripped out right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he could take on Arnie there.
Oh yeah.
You know, he jumps it. There's not like too much to say about this except like sweet action, mm-hmm. and then you know, boom, next page, Ivar turns on this machine.
He jumps at Ivar with his sword raised like he's gonna chop him down.
Yes.
That should be mentioned.
Okay, yeah.
He's willing to put Ivar down to stop it.
I mean,
kill his own brother.
Yeah, I think kill is more than put down. I mean,
yeah.
Filicide.
Yeah, he's going to go and kill his brother, but Ivar says, too late, he does it, and then boom.
Well, one thing that was interesting earlier in the first or second page is that Aram seems to have an idea of what this machine is going to do.
Right.
And he seems to understand that this is a bad thing, capitalized. And so I think it seems that he understands that, you know, he has to put down his brother in order to prevent a very bad thing. But, boom, the bad thing happens.
Boom.
And as we see this big boom, that's the it says it down at the bottom. It's from Genesis chapter 7, which describes the flood. Where Noah got in his ark with his children's and wives, and two of each animal.
And just to really quickly be super technical, there was more than two of each animal on the ark.
Sure, that's right. It was
they had to eat.
That's right, because it was more than two of the clean animals, right? But only two of the unclean animals.
There was two of every animal on the ark,
uh-huh.
and there also had to be some excess for them to eat. While they were on the ark, and not only that, when they get off the ark, it says that they sacrificed to the Lord. Well, they couldn't sacrifice the two of, because there'd be nothing left.
Uh-huh.
So there is just Bible nerding. There's more than two, but there's two and then
mm-hmm.
something to eat.
So I looked up this chapter of Genesis, and one thing that was pretty interesting is that one of the phrases that stuck out at me from this is that the floodgates of the heavens were opened, and it really kind of seems like that's what we're seeing, but not referring to floodgates releasing water, but floodgates releasing this blue energy.
Uh-huh.
Are we ready to jump ahead 10,000 years?
Strap on, everybody.
Okay. All right. So today we've got this little kid looking at the heathen cultures exhibit, which I believe contains the ziggurat of Ur there, as well as the pyramids and a Mayan temple.
Yep.
And my guess is this kid is named after Rush Limbaugh. Is that?
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah,
okay, all right. Yeah.
What it seems like.
And there's a lot of kind of
political
stuff like that. Yeah, riffing on kind of like political stuff in here. In the next panel, he says he wants to ride the dinosaurs like they did in caveman times. You know, I had a hard time kind of figuring out what the purpose of this park was, because it seemed like it was mixing a lot of ideas together.
It's parodying, what's the name of that park? Dinoland? The Creation Museum. Is that the theme park? That guy that got arrested for tax evasion? No. There's a guy informally referred to as Dr. Dinosaur who opened up a theme park promoting young Earth creationism.
How about the Creation Museum?
Is it the Creation Museum?
In Kentucky?
Yeah,
Creation Museum.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a theme park that promotes the idea of, like, dinosaurs and man existing side by side prior to the flood.
Okay.
That's what a lot of this looks like to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he also says there's a nod out there to the kind of diabetes culture.
Uh-huh.
you know, the overweight guy in the little pusher machine.
Who's a rascal.
Yeah, who's got to go to the food court to raise his blood sugar. all right, so this is in Adams County, Ohio, is what we find out.
Still Tuesday.
And it's still Tuesday. So I looked up Adams County, and here's a few. It's named after John Adams, our second president.
Second president.
It's in the very south of Ohio. It's one of the southernmost counties. And interestingly enough, one of the kind of biggest natural features is an ancient crater impact site.
So
I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to find out about it. All right, we're ready for the next page?
Let's do it.
All right. Now, we Archer's in the Ark, and I think that this is, of course, like, again, a throwback to the idea of what was quoted in the page where we saw the world explode, where it talked about the flood. So, you know, this is another kind of callback to that story.
Right.
And then, boom, we get some sweet Archer action now. All of his brothers and sisters are attacking him, and he shows off all his skills of various martial arts combats.
Right.
And I don't really have much to say about this other than, like, I think it's pretty cool.
It is.
How they're showing, well, how they have that little thing explaining what the different martial arts are.
Right.
And it looks to me like the drawings are fairly well done to, like, they do look like very different fighting styles that he's using as he's doing them. So I think it seems like he did a really good job illustrating those fighting styles properly. And, you know, it looks like all of his opponents have different fighting skills, too, because this guy in the red shirt has a sword, which...
Have we turned the page now?
Sure, let's go on to the next page.
All right.
Ding!
Yeah. Well, we turned the page a while ago,
uh-oh.
I think. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, so, whack, capoeira, whack, Krav Maga, and whack, taekwondo, and whack, next page. I mean, I don't really have much more to add to those pages, do you?
No.
Okay.
Do you like the little sub boxes with describing what he's doing there?
Yes.
I think it's really great.
Okay.
Thought it was a really nice addition.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. What did you think?
I thought it was all right.
You seem kind of ambivalent about it.
I when I first saw it, I wasn't sure, and I went back and looked at it again. I thought, okay, it's cool. I wonder if it's going to be something where they're going to do that through the book, where there's little kind of like information pieces, because if I recall correctly, I might be mistaking myself. I think they used that back in the original Archer and Armstrong run. Little things where didn't they do stuff like that? Maybe I'm mixing my comic knowledge.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
Not sure. It actually reminds me of the current Prophet run. They do a lot of stuff like that.
All right.
Chiclo, what about you? You haven't chimed in on our little pop-up message windows.
Don't really have anything to add. It's good for exposition, an interesting storytelling technique.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to the next page where we see Archer with his parents.
Yes.
So this is interesting because, you know, the first panel we see Archer victorious, but then in the second panel here, we kind of figure out what Archer's superpower is. If he sees something, he can do it, which was a bit different than the original Archer.
Right.
Because the original Archer was just exceptionally skilled with, like aim and hand-to-hand combat.
He was a good basketball player, good horse player.
Yeah, he was very good basketball player.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So is the new Archer basic, or does he have the same powers as the Taskmaster?
That's what it seems like to me.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
He's a Marvel character. He can copy fighting styles just by seeing somebody use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so. Like, I think that that's that seems like what he's got to me. So yeah, he's a Taskmaster.
All right, fair enough.
All right. So and their little secret order is called the Dominion. Now, what I found is Dominion is in Dominionism is sometimes a reference to like conservative Christian political activism and people who are trying to bring back biblical law into like our statutes and laws that we have.
Okay.
And where that comes from is from a quote from Genesis, from chapter 1, verse 28, when it says,
"The Lord gave us dominion over."
Yeah, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth.
Right.
So nice. I don't know if this is like, you know, expressly meant to be that, but I think it might be kind of a reference to that. They also send out Archer on his mission here to kill he who is not to be named.
It's a nice throw out to old school ANA right there.
Right.
Well, oh, that's right.
That's what they called him. That's what the sect referred to him as.
That's right. Okay, I totally forgot that. Yeah. So, yeah, that is a callback to the original Archer and Armstrong.
Right.
And also, Mr. Archer has another biblical quote from Thessalonians. And Thessalonians, or 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4 are, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exileth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that as God sitteth in the temple of God, shewing himself that he is God."
Can I do a quick Christian commentary on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is the middle of the rapture, according to, you know, I would probably say, of course, the Bible is up to interpretation, but sure, most people who believe in a rapture pre 7 years of punishment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pre-tribulation, pre-tribbers, as I myself am one of them. In the middle 3.5 years, what's going to happen is what the Thessalonian talks about here, and it's also in the Old Testament, that the Antichrist is going to go and set himself up as God in the temple. So that is talking about the time of the middle part of the tribulation period where the Antichrist is going to set himself up as God in the Jewish temple, in the rebuilt temple on the Temple Mount, which of course is
in
amazing.
Jerusalem, right?
Well, yeah, it's where the Dome of the Rock is currently right now.
Okay, uh-huh.
So they're going to have to destroy the Dome of the Rock, rebuild the Jewish temple, and then it's going to be all good in the hood for a while. Then at that point, it's called the Abomination of Desolation is what this is talking about, when the Antichrist goes in the middle part and says, "No, no, no, I'm God, worship me now." And that's when it really gets bad for the Jews, and that's the middle point of the tribulation period, that quote right there.
And so the son of perdition refers to the Antichrist?
The Antichrist.
Okay. All right.
Which is Satan, this kind of the same in one, often used the same way.
Yeah.
The Antichrist is given Satan's powers.
And they're saying that he, who is not to be named, is this person.
I think that's what they're trying to say here, is that's who they think Arm is, maybe.
Right.
And then, so of course, where is the he who is not to be named? He's in the festering isle of corruption and criminality.
Not
this was another hilarious panel, because he's like, New York? You know, as if, obviously, that's the answer. Which, yeah, I think is kind of funny. Then they give him a piece of the fulcrum, which we'll see more later.
Right.
Off man's belt buckle.
Yes.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. All right, so next page.
That's funny. Awkward. Buckle.
So this is a cool page where it kind of shows all the rest of his family. And the interesting thing here is, you know, so his family, quote unquote, is all different nationalities.
Yep. All over the world.
Uh huh.
That's right.
And interestingly enough, the chief creative officer is actually so. There's one of the names called out in the middle panel is Dinesh, and my guess is that that's a reference to Dinesh Shamdasani, the chief creative officer of Valiant.
What's up, Dino?
Yeah.
There's a Bort in there, and I think that's a Simpsons reference.
Okay. Oh, that's right!
Bort.
Yeah.
What about and the last name there?
Iskandar? Is that the Muslim devil?
Ooh. I'm not sure.
You got me on that one, Chico.
I remember it was the name of the planet in... that cartoon where they go off looking for the starship Yamamoto, maybe?
Let's see.
Yamamoto, the guy from World War II?
No.
Oh, no. Not I see Roko Yamamoto.
No, not Ichiro, no.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is seeing here is that Iskandar is just the Persian version of the name Alexander.
The names are definitely showing you that this is a multi-nation, United Nations family that the archers have pulled into their place.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. Right. And so, and of course, we get cute Mary Maria, who comes up to say goodbye.
That's right.
Should we go to the next page?
Actually, I have one thing to mention. Yeah. Did you guys notice they have Barry also mentioned in the list of kids?
Barry Windsor Smith, possibly?
Yep.
Oh, there we go. Could be Barry. Yeah, Barry Windsor Smith. Ah, good find. I didn't pick up on that.
The next page is has my very favorite image of the whole book.
Oh, I bet I know which it is.
I bet you do.
Yeah. All right. But before we get to that best panel in the book, we should run through Mary Maria's warning that he should get out. And this is the first time we're seeing kind of dissension in the ranks.
But why is she saying get out?
Well, I don't think we know. Oh, because you'll never...
Doesn't she say it? I haven't read it in a couple of days. Doesn't she say that she's the only one who's ever been outside of the compound?
Yeah, uh-huh. She left, but then she was scared.
So she has a taste of the outside. Everyone else, all these kids, including Archer, has no idea what the real world is. He's grown up in this Christian amusement park.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So it kind of, I think, sets up the naivete of Archer when he gets out.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think so. So Mary Maria runs away crying because I think that her and Archer have a little thing for each other somehow. And then we get the best panel in the book.
That's right.
Dinosaur Flo.
Flo and Andromeda.
That's right.
Right. Beautiful.
Of course, this is a reference to Archer and Armstrong number 5 and 6, where they go and meet Andromeda and her pet dinosaur, Flo.
I also want to say quickly for me, stylistically, I mean, I'm by no means an art, you know, a graphic artist or anything like that. I like how there's background, 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 and all of a sudden when she runs away, there's no background, just white, and then it goes back to background, and then it goes back to the white. I think it's a visually stimulating page, and whoever set that up, I like how that looks. I think that is the best page of the book. I think it sets up a lot for the story. I think visually it's excellent. Again, I think if you look in the background when the chick is running away, I like how they're all drawn. I like the body language of the people. I mean, the Andy thing is great. And in the very last little corner, I'll see you when I see you. Again, it's just him with the white background. I think that's really cool.
Definitely paints the emotions of the scene.
Yeah, definitely.
Very well done, page.
I think it's a kind of a page where it shows what comics are good at as a medium, the visual combining with the, you know, the verbal storytelling. I think it's a great example of this. So whoever designed this, well done, Valiant.
Nice. Well, I'm sure it was the artist. I'm sure it was Clayton Henry. So
Clayton Henry.
Good
well
job,
done.
Clayton Henry. Yeah.
That's right.
All right, let's go to page 12 here, where we get the triumphant return of Archer's journaling. Archer's writing in journals is something that was first started in Archer and Armstrong number 5, and it was a narrative device used all throughout Barry Windsor Smith's run.
And I think it was the best way to tell that story. It kind of is told, what I interpreted back in the old run through Barry Windsor Smith is that Armstrong was the kind of central character, but it was all told through Archer's perspective, and I loved that.
Uh-huh.
I think it'd be great if they were going to continue that. I think it's a wonderful way to tell the story.
It is nice. It's very nice.
One thing I like here is that he says, Mom and Papa always taught us that Manhattan is a rat's nest of liberal, Marxist, atheist Nazis who want to rob us of our freedom by making us dependent on government handouts. And that is 100% true. I thought that was a really funny line.
Yeah,
it is.
It kind of reminded me of from 30 Rock, when Jack refers to California as the People's Gay Public of Drugifornia, you know, that kind of commentary. But so he's showing up, and this is Times Square here, where he shows up in New York.
And what I think is interesting, too, is he says in many ways it's also a lot like home.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I thought that was a reference to kind of like the spectacle of it due to it being him growing up in an amusement park.
There you go.
That's what I kind of read into that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So then he talks about how it's a den of sin and everything is drenched in sex. And I'm on the next page now.
Yep.
And we have our nudist cowboy, which I couldn't find that being a reference to anything specific. Like, it seems so prominent that I thought...
No, there's a guy in New York that does that.
Oh, there's really? Okay.
He goes by the name The Naked Cowboy.
That's right, The Naked Cowboy. Okay. He wears underwear and sings guitars. Yeah. It's like a famous New York thing.
Okay, all right.
And he's almost as muscly as I am.
Okay. And what I thought was interesting at the very end of this page here, like right where there's the big panel of the American flag, is Archer talks about how people have forgotten how to open their eyes and see that God has already given them all everything they could desire. And he talks about how the world is truly a wonderful place, and I give thanks for it every day. And I think that kind of starts to get into the philosophical Archer that, you know, in the original Valiant, Archer eventually became a great spiritual leader of our time. And I think that this kind of showed that he is in touch with a little bit of a more spiritual approach to appreciating the world.
It's also great, too, the fact that he grew up in that small amusement park environment. And here he is out in the world the first time, and he can immediately connect with that aspect of himself.
Yeah. What I kind of like is that I felt like his faith wasn't shaken by this. And
right.
It just kind of showed that he still, like, fundamentally remained the same person that he was and appreciated the same things.
And I think that panel where it talks about, even in this capital of earthly pride, I'm confronted and astonished by beauty.
Well, when he says pride, it does so with a capital P, which indicates specifically the sin of pride.
That's a good point.
And in this these couple of panels, he's showing a great deal of humility.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the opposite of pride.
Yeah, nice catch.
Oh, exactly. The fact that in the face of this, of what his parents had considered to be evil and sinful, his character comes out. I'm still confronted by and astonished by beauty.
Yeah.
Very positive. It's really cool.
Cool. All right. So let's move on to the next page where Archer finds himself in the meatpacking district as his Aquaman belt buckle is taking him there.
Yes.
And he's saying a quote from Psalms 23, verse 4, which is, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." That's what he's saying to himself as he walks into the door of this bar. And I just want to say, I was using a Cambridge King James Version Bible for looking up all these references.
Nice.
Just to cite my source here. Okay, so this bar he walks into is an actual bar in New York.
I figured it was.
Called Hogs and Heifers in the Meatpacking District. And there really are bras up all over the bar. And from what I understand, I've never been to this bar, but from what I could tell, it was very much kind of like a divey type of bar, and kind of like a country western rock and roll type of bar.
Uh-huh.
So it does seem like very accurately depicted, and this is a very real place.
I love, too, on the... You know, where the girls say, for the last time, not going to do it. On the wall there, you know, you mentioned Hogs and Heifers. Well, there's a picture right there on the wall by the bartender.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep. Uh-huh. All right. So there's this woman flirtatiously being accosted by this other son of perdition, which then that's another kind of reference to that Bible verse that was mentioned earlier.
Well, if you look on the back of their jackets, I think that's the name of their motorcycle gang.
Yeah.
See how it says on the back of his jacket, the son of perdition?
Yep.
But it happens to also look like a satanic goat. Yeah.
Five-point goat at that, with the horns and the ears and spout.
The kind of mark of the beast goat.
Right.
Okay. So now here's what's interesting. In this panel, we're seeing this Aquaman belt buckle shoot its beam of light at this guy. But
look, it's not really, right?
Armstrong is on the other side of him.
Correct.
And that's what it's really shooting at. So he misinterprets this guy as being
the
he who shall not be given a name.
Right.
And then, whack, we get some good action here.
Yes, we do.
Get behind me. That's another Bible quote.
There you go. Lay it out. This is my favorite podcast ever, all the Bible we're talking about here.
Get behind me, Satan.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Get behind me, Satan is a famous.
And for the life of me, I cannot remember where it came from.
Oh yeah, you do.
No.
It's
when it comes to citing chapters and verses, I am horrible.
I think I got it.
It's with Peter and Jesus talking.
Okay.
I've got it in Matthew. You want to go for it?
No, if you guys, I mean, I can tell the story.
Okay, it's Matthew chapter 16, verse 23.
Does it only appear once, though? It could be in each of the four Gospels.
It looks like he is saying, "But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men."
And it's the time where Jesus says, "Who do men say I am?" And they say, you know, the prophet, this, and Peter says, "Well, you're God." And Jesus says, "All right, well done, Peter." And then he's as they're conversating, says, "I gotta go die. I have to go and die at Jerusalem." And Peter says, "No, you're not gonna die." You know, and that's where right away Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan," to Peter, because saying, "Peter, you have your eyes on what you want, not heavenly things." So that kind of "get behind me, Satan" is kind of like a Christian ease kind of phrase of, like, you know, when something bad happens or something bad is said, you know, it's kind of like, it almost be a thing where, like, I mean, I've been in a room with some of my friends before, and, like, we'll be talking about, like, and this is going to be probably really embarrassing for me to say, but say if someone's talking about, "Oh, you know, the Boston Celtics are an awesome basketball team," I would say, "Hey, get behind me, Satan," because I don't like the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So that's kind of what it's developed in our popular culture now. But Archer's using it as a Bible quote of, you know, where you're doing the things that you want instead of what God is wanting. That's what Get Behind Me saying.
You just thought you'd looked up all the references.
I'm not nearly as familiar with the Bible as you guys are. Like, I know the ones that are obviously from the Bible, but I don't know all of these things. So
it's... Well, at least you had the thought to look them up. I didn't look up any of them.
Yeah, but you know them all. I had to look them up.
Yeah, this is really cool. I'm loving this discussion.
So at the very end, we get our modern day introduction to Armstrong. Finally. Yes, and he shows that he's gotten two more trophies from his two new friends. You know, kind of Armstrong as the he loves wine, women, and song kind of character.
Right.
And I thought that was a kind of a funny introduction here. And, you know, the bartender says, "You're the bouncer, go bounce." And now in this next quote, he says, "Melissa, Melissa, mater saeva cupidum, forbear, cruel mother of soft desires." And what this is mater saeva cupidum is an ode by Horace, who was a Greek poet from 65 to 8 BC. And I didn't read all of the ode, but it's essentially like an ode to Venus, and it's basically cruel mother of desires talking about Venus, and an ode to the goddess Venus.
And Venus in the Roman, or in the Greek mythology, was Aphrodite, who was Armstrong's wife.
No, it was Andromeda. Was
Andromeda.
Oh, Andromeda, that's right.
Yep. Ah. Oh, almost. So... Armstrong goes to go take her.
That was still a good, you know, polytheism pull right there.
Yes,
right.
Wasn't Andromeda? Andromeda was related to Aphrodite, right?
Well, in theory, they're all related.
Aphrodite, if she was the product of Zeus and Seafoam, if I remember right.
Oh, okay, I'm mixing things up. I think.
I think it was Ouranos and Seafoam. Now that I say that,
you say Kronos?
Ouranos. Kronos' father.
Right.
Uranus.
I have one of those too.
No. Ouranos, the sky, as Kronos sliced off his bits with the scythe, blood splashed into the ocean, and when the blood mixed with the ocean, Venus came out of the sea foam.
That's right.
Or, mm-hmm. Aphrodite came out of the sea foam for Ouranos.
Nice.
Okay, so this was really cool, I thought. And the bartender says, no more poetry. But then, you know, that he has to go be the bouncer. But Armstrong, never to be outdone, goes and does both.
That's
and
right.
What he recites here is the poem called Choose from Carl Sandburg.
Love Carl Sandburg.
And this is from a collection of poems called Chicago Poems, published in 1916. It's a very short poem, and he does recite the entire poem in these three panels.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I think we get the ready to go to the next panel for the best fighting move ever. Our eyes of Blorg. That panel was so disgusting, but it cracked me up so much when I saw it. It looks so horrible, but still so hilarious at the same time.
I mean, you can almost, I hate to say it, smell it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I felt terrible just, like, seeing it, because imagining how awful it would be.
Oh.
Yeah. Fucking got the poor guy's eyes.
I know.
Oh. Look, his mouth's open and everything, dude. It's no good.
Yeah.
So, Archer and Armstrong team up, of course, before...
Of course.
Aquaman's belt buckle shows that, Aram is the one who is not to be named.
Right.
And they fight.
Now, quickly, can we talk really quick? We're on page, I guess, whatever it is.
We're on page, like, 18 or 17 right. or 18. Yeah.
The third one down from the throw-up.
Uh-huh.
How large of a man is Armstrong, according to that panel?
Oh, it looks like he's, like, 7 feet tall.
I mean, he's got to be pretty close to, like, 6'10", 6'11", about, what, 400 pounds? I mean, look at that. His arm, I know it's a jacket, but his arm is big.
For 6'11", 400 isn't that big.
Yeah.
True. Well, yeah, you're right. If he was shaped like that, he'd have to be bigger than 400.
Yeah, he's got to be 450 or 5 if he's 6'11".
It's a big man right there. From
the bald guy was bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that is going to be the perspective they're going to go with, or maybe that was just a kind of a drawing where that's the way it fit in, or maybe all the two guys are fighting are really small guys too, but that's a huge-looking Armstrong right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a big guy in this.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if it was just kind of like for dramatic effect.
Right.
It may be just kind of like, one of those – it's, again, one of those things that comics can do that you can't really do with other mediums, which is kind of take creative liberties with sizes and stuff to show different like effects that you can't with like movies or TV or something.
Right, of course.
Right.
All right, so next page, Archer and Armstrong, of course, fight. I thought this was hilarious when Archer says, "You taught me your name. How dare you? You are not to be named." You know, it's kind of like taking it literally. The thing that is kind of meant kind of philosophically. I thought that was a pretty funny little thing there.
Right.
And also, I noticed in the very first, the second panel of that page where he's, "You are he!" kicking Armstrong, I see something around Armstrong's chest there.
Oh, he's got a satchel on, no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, okay.
He's got a satchel.
He has a satchel on the cover, too.
Yes.
Ah.
Okay. All right, good point.
That's actually a little more than what I would call a satchel. But...
Are you talking the cover?
No, I'm talking about on this page right here.
It's a man purse there.
That's a merce.
I'm merce. Going merce. Yep, he's going merce. Okay.
But you know what? It's a magic satchel.
Yep. Magic satchel, of course, was Armstrong's magic bag from the classic run.
It's not magic. It contains a tesseract.
Well, whatever it is. but then, so let's go to the next page here, because I think we're pummeling through the action. And these weird sect warriors shoot their gas into it, and they pass out. These are really strange-looking dudes.
Yeah.
These sect... I mean, I assume these are, like, the sect warriors here. Like, they have really strange outfits. Now, here's something kind of interesting that I just realized. Are these outfits at all similar to what Ivar was wearing at the very beginning? You know, it's just the things around, like, the legs made me think about it.
No, not really.
Okay, you're right.
I just went up to the top of the book, and no.
Okay. Really. No, yeah, you're right. I was overdrawing conclusions there. All right, so let's go to the next. They're in the Federal Hall on Wall Street. Federal Hall is what is Federal Hall? I looked this up. It's a national memorial, and it was a New York City Hall, and it was the first Capitol building. And George Washington took the oath of office as our first president there. It was the home to the first Congress, the Supreme Court, and the executive branch offices during the birth of our nation.
I love this idea of the federal government fitting in one building.
Yeah, I know. All you states' rights people would be very proud of this.
It's what we need, a government that knows its place.
That's right. Armstrong explains that the sect is kind of everywhere, and George Washington gave his inaugural address to the other sect members, and that the sect has taken over every secret society in America. I thought these are kind of fun pages because it seems really similar to the drawback, like, or back to like the classic Archer and Armstrong issues 3 and 4, when Armstrong's telling Archer, the sect is everywhere. Like, see those guys over there? Yeah, they're in the sect. And it's like the guy selling ice cream across the street or something.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Anything else on these pages before we're almost at the end?
Well, the one thing I thought about when I was reading this the second time is that they mentioned the Dominion. You know, Archer's parents mentioned the Dominion in the beginning. Then they talk about the sect here, but they don't really mention Dominion again. So I wondered, is the Dominion a part of the sect?
Yeah, I was...
You didn't read the last page, did you?
Oh, is it mentioned again?
Yeah, they address it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because there's three groups mentioned in this book.
Right.
Dominion sect, and then the 10% or whatever it is, something on the end?
1%?
1%, yeah.
There you go.
All right, so let's...
They also talk about the Masons.
Yeah.
Right.
On the next page from where we are now, they talk about the Freemasons.
All right, so let's jump to the next page here.
And really quickly, is anyone else bothered that the fact that Armstrong's locked up at Archer isn't? Is that okay for everybody?
Hmm.
Huh.
I guess if they're familiar with Archer, they should know to lock him up.
That is kind of strange.
He's not locked up. Hmm. You know, which may be one of those, again, comic booky things. It kind of is because you have to have the action going on. That kind of, for me, I was like, you know, that why they didn't lock him up, but whatever.
Okay.
Well, I think because they know that he's a part of them somewhat, right?
Maybe they figured that. Maybe they figured that...
But then why would they leave him in the same room with their enemy if he's one of them?
Good point.
I don't want to shoot holes in the story here. I'm just saying it's the one part of the book where I was kind of like,
Well, at this point, Archer is disposable.
But it does seem strange. Maybe they didn't know that there was a possibility that Archer and Armstrong would be buddies. Maybe they're just assuming, there's no way that he would ever help them or anything. So it could be something like that. But yeah, now that you mention
it's the worst part of the book for me.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's
I didn't even
point.
Really notice it. I guess I was just kind of like really interested in where the story was going that I was willing to say, okay. Archer wasn't tied up. Cool. All right, so there's still more. He talks about the boon, and that little Aquaman belt that he has is a piece of the boon. And that. So here's interesting. So Aram hid what was left of it.
Right.
After it ended the world that came before this one.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's pretty interesting right there.
Well, it also somehow is going to mean Armstrong survived it or somehow got knowledge of it somehow.
Yeah, yeah, and that was kind of I imagine that we'll learn more about how they survived it in future issues and how it kind of made them immortal. I would hope so.
Right.
So we got the return of this kind of pop-up window showing the skills for lockpicking.
It's kind of like a pop-up video. You guys remember that back in the day?
Yeah.
You guys hold that for that?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Video? Sure, of course. Love pop-up video. Kind of like also Beavis and Butthead when they used to talk about videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Yep. So here's interesting. So Archer's still not convinced. Says he's going to come back here and then I'm going to kill you after he finds out what's going on.
Right.
So he's still not having it.
Right.
So he attacks these soldier dudes, soldiers.
Before we switch the page, we're still on the lockpicking page, right?
Okay, sure.
Great face, Clayton Henry. He can draw himself some face.
Yeah, he does. He's really good at that.
If you look at this page, just in this page, lockpicking page, the Armstrong face, awesome. The Archer face, where he's pointing at Armstrong, I mean, you couldn't draw that better.
Yeah. Very well done.
He's got the good face working.
He does a really good job at showing different expressions and using capturing the expressiveness required to tell the story really well.
He's got a good face, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, so whack, crack, he takes down those guys. I thought that middle panel was kind of cool, showing, like, Archer in two places at once, kind of showing how fast he was moving.
Right, right.
I thought that was cool.
It is cool.
Now, do these guys, the way they look, they remind you a little bit of Cobra a little bit?
I could see that, like later Cobra when they got really ridiculous.
The little kind of Cobra-esque.
Or the Emperor from Star Wars, his personal soldiers, the Red.
Uh-huh. Or, you know, they kind of look a lot like AIM soldiers or something from Marvel or Hydra or something like that, you know?
Sure. Just your basic evil henchmen, the kind of guys that follow Cobra Commander or the Shredder or Dave Hester around.
Yeah.
That's funny, Chico.
Okay.
That's funny.
Yep.
So it's the flippin' Bullcorn. Gets Archer to take a look, and he realizes that it's his dad talking, and he talks, and then boom, so next page, we finally get it. Bang, there's the 1%. They enact the will of the demon Mammon on Earth.
Mammon, of course, another Bible reference to money.
Yes, and Mammon is often personified as a demon, and from what I understand, he's considered one of the seven princes of hell. When each of the seven princes is a manifestation of, or represents one of the seven deadly sins. In Mammon's case, he represents the deadly sin of greed. So this is now the second of seven deadly sins that we've seen represented in this book, or mentioned. Because first we had pride, and now we've got greed.
Then you got the golden calf behind them.
Yes.
Right. Which, of course, was made by Aaron, Moses' brother, when Moses is up on Mount Sinai.
In the Ten Commandments
first time, yeah. And which of course is the same place where Christ was crucified, on the very same mountain. Mm. And Aaron builds a golden calf, and all of the Jews have like the largest orgy in the history of the world. And that's when Moses comes down and sees them all getting funky, gets the Ten Commandments, and he throws them at the Ten Commandments. Those are the Ten Commandments, the tablets at them, and totally old school, like, you know, goes off on them, and then goes and gets a second copy of the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. And second printing variant.
Puts up and swallows up some of the worst.
Yeah, the gold variant.
The gold variant of the Ten Commandments, right, yeah. I like it.
Yeah, variant cover, second edition.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, it so these 1%...
Well, I mean, you know, the first edition sold out so quickly.
I know.
Now, there might have been a rumor that a couple of certain people ordered extra copies of the Ten Commandments that might have inflated the numbers, but basically, Ten Commandments sold out through the distributor.
Did God have an incentive to... He gave the money for certain people to order more copies of them than...
That's right.
Okay, just to inflate the initial print numbers. Yeah.
Okay.
So I these 1%, they're wearing bear and bull masks, and the bears and bulls are kind of a symbol of the market in general. And that's, we get bear markets and bull markets, and a lot of financial centers like have big famous statues of bears and bulls fighting each other. It's kind of like a symbol of finance. So that's another thing that the bears and bulls represent there. Yeah. So we get their plan that they are going to blow up Greece.
Right.
And they are looking for the rest of the boon. So. There we go.
So then we know that the 1% is not part of Archer's group.
Do you see that they're wearing powder wigs with masks?
Oh, yeah. You're right. I didn't notice that.
Or Washington hairstyle.
You're right. Yeah, I didn't notice that. Wow. Good catch. Yeah.
And once again, good face on Archer at the very end right there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so they find out that Archer, he was just a sacrificial lamb in this, and he was betrayed by his mother and father. In a very different way than in the original Archer and Armstrong, but again betrayed by his mother and father.
Right.
And that's it. We made it all the way through. Man, this commentary
took us twice as long as we thought.
I know. We planned for this to be like 20 to 30 minutes or so. So thanks for sticking in and listening to this whole thing. We're gonna have our overall thoughts and reviews in the next Only the Valiant episode. That's gonna be coming out really soon. please let us know what you thought of this commentary track. We really want to hear if you think this is something you enjoy and something you would like to hear more of, because if people like it, we may do it for, you know, a book a month or something. But we don't know that yet. We need to hear from you guys to find out if that's something that we should do or something that you guys would be interested in.
Yes.
All right. So for the commentary track, signing out, I am Sean.
I'm Gigolo.
I'm Jonesy.
It's Elvine saying, feel my power!